Good afternoon, everybody. This is the Reverend Blake Ruby. Welcome to my show, The Universe of the Soul's Evolution. Everybody here on this planet and outside there in outer space, maybe orbiting the moon or from whatever solar system you're in, with that great technology you have, I know you can access whatever kind of technology we have. So if you're tuning in, it's because you like me and I talk about spiritual things and extraterrestrials. There's not too many people that do that. I think it's a pretty tough subject to talk about, esoteric things. Did I ever tell you on a previous show that I was a Rosicrucian one time? A Rosicrucian is kind of like a mystical person that goes back to the times of Egypt approximately 5,000 years ago, and they study all about the human being and the nature of dreams and astral projection and the human aura. My mother was a Rosicrucian. She had 22 degrees. I got to the fourth degree, and then I got kind of bored of it. But it gets pretty complicated. And one of the things they do that I remember is say that certain subjects aren't to be discussed with people because it's beyond their comprehension. And plus, some things are meant to be secret, apparently, to them. So you have to pay the dues and join them before they'll tell you all the secret stuff. But in my opinion, everything should be open game, so to speak. I should be able to talk about anything with you if you're willing to listen, because spirituality, developing yourself spiritually, there are no limits. Nothing should be held back. Because tomorrow might not be here for us, right? Tomorrow might not be here for us. And everyone knows that, but we tend to think that we are invincible. And that's not true. You know that. But some people don't have time to listen to that. However, when you get older, and if you've ever come close to dying before, and there's a lot of people that have, then you do appreciate learning about the nature of the spirit and what's going to happen when we die, the afterlife, and other planets that are around the galaxy and around the universe. I've said this before, I'll say it again, my friends. The universe is teeming with life. Life is something that we don't fully comprehend the nature of. It is the norm, it's not the exception in the universe, because the creator of the universe is the creator of bodies. God is every body, every single body, not only sentient life, but also plant and animal life. I guess you could call a particular type of plant life a body, in the sense a tree isn't really a body, but a dog or a cat or a rhinoceros or a hippopotamus, they're all different bodies, and the creator of the universe is a creator of bodies. And here on Earth, we have over 1 million types of insects, little bodies, small little bodies with eyes, some with wings, metabolisms, reproductive systems. Also in the oceans, seas, rivers, and lakes, we have approximately 30,000 different types of fish, crustaceans, and there's over 10,000 types of birds and reptiles, each 10,000 types. Amazing creations, wouldn't you say? Birds, just think of all the different types of birds, different colored feathers, different sizes and shapes, different colored beaks, hummingbirds and parrots and you name them. There's so many different types. Cardinals and whippoorwills and sparrows, blackbirds, red-winged blackbirds, grackles, eagles, hawks, falcons. I mean, 10,000 types. And they just didn't happen by accident, my friends. They were thought into existence, if you will. And there's 9,000 types of amphibians and 5,000 types of mammals. We are mammals, warm-blooded. Anyway, if all that life happened by accident in the universe, logically, it could happen by accident anywhere. And you know they're discovering planets all the time out there, right? The James Webb Space Telescope, Kepler Space Telescope, they've discovered, I forget what the latest count is, but thousands of exoplanets. Some that are similar to Earth that could sustain life like we know it, that have water, which is the key ingredient for life in the universe. And you know there's life out there. Come on. We consider ourselves to be intelligent people, do we not? We pride ourselves on our intelligence. Therefore, I think, in my opinion, the intelligent person knows that there is life out there, just doesn't believe there's life, knows that there's life. We know that there are many different beings out there. You've heard of the gray aliens, the stereotypical 5 feet tall, gray skin, big dark eyes. And then there are humanoid other types like the grays with different color skins and different color eyes and shapes of eyes of different sizes, small. I've heard that there's a race of human beings that are approximately 3 feet tall. Some that are 9 feet tall. Blue skin, skin that is coarse like bark. Or there's the reptilians that look like snakes that are walking on 2 feet, humanoid, you know. There are some extraterrestrials that have the heads of lions, and the bodies of men, if you will. Very fierce species, some are. And canine species, too, with the heads of dogs, like in Egypt and the hieroglyphics that are on the pyramids there and in other places that visited the Earth all those years ago, apparently. According to some people, we've been visited in our past and are still currently being visited by at least 60 different species of extraterrestrials. You have to see the YouTube video called Unacknowledged. Unacknowledged is a great movie about life elsewhere in the universe. If you watch that it's actually a documentary, Unacknowledged, I guarantee you, if you're not a believer in life out there, before you watch that documentary, you will be after you watch it. It is so very convincing. And then there's another one called Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind, The Lost Century, and I'm trying to remember, there's one, the first one that came out, there's one called Sirius, S-I-R-I-U-S, and there's another one. If you look in YouTube or Google, Dr. Stephen Greer, he's the founder of the Disclosure Project, that's trying to get the governments of the world, not only the U.S. government, but other governments to come out and say everything they know. Tell us everything they know about extraterrestrials. But the problem is they have some technology which can be used by our so-called enemies, enemies in quotation marks, which could be used against us. So some of this technology is very sophisticated, you know. Some of these civilizations are hundreds of millions of years in advance of our own, that were traveling the universe even before our solar system was created, and maybe even our Milky Way galaxy, you know, because there's a lot of galaxies out there. And this technology, I mean, they know how to surf the fabric of outer space. Einstein said in his theory of general relativity, which came out around 1915. His theory of special relativity came out around 1905. And basically he said there that there's nothing faster than the speed of light, or was that Let me go back, please. E equals mc squared, general theory of special relativity. Energy and mass and matter are interchangeable. One can become the other. And nothing is faster than the speed of light. And the theory of general relativity in 1915 basically said that space is like a fabric and that can be warped and changed in its shape and configuration. So in other words, these extraterrestrials, they know how to surf the fabric of outer space using special beams of anti-gravity electromagnetism. They can fire a beam and change, warp outer space, if you will. And so then when they unactivate, so to speak, their beam and the fabric of space is restored, then they kind of like surf the fabric as it comes back into existence, if you know what I mean. And they do that multiple times a second. And so suffice it to say, they can travel very quickly, like millions of miles in seconds. But even that's not really sufficient to travel light years in space, because at that configuration, in that configuration, it will still take millions of years to traverse, say, 100 light years. And so what they do, they know how to, when they get up to the speed of light, in a conventional mode, so to speak, there's a lot of external forces weighing in on their spacecraft, which are mostly created with plant matter. Plant matter is something we know very little about. My mother used to talk to flowers in the houses that we lived in. She could carry on a conversation with an African violet plant, and she would say, when I have these conversations, I see them move. They respond to conversation. Plant, we know very little about plant life, specifically flowers. And so these extraterrestrial civilizations, they've learned to incorporate plant matter in their extraterrestrial vehicles, in their space vehicles. And there's an interfacing with the plant matter incorporated into their spaceship, and then through electrical stimulation or some other way to incorporate heat. And they are able to, once their spacecraft reach the speed of light, and Einstein was right that apparently that there is nothing faster than the speed of light, but when you get close to the speed of light, those external forces build up, so that if you know how to convert that energy that's built up, and through electrical stimulation or heat stimulation, you're able to then go interdimensional, transition to another dimension, which is like a thought dimension, if you will, a fourth dimension, and then the people, the inhabitants of the spacecraft and the spacecraft itself, the molecules are disassembled and reassembled on the other side. It's a very complicated process. I don't know it in its entirety, but suffice it to say that once they get to the other side, then they travel by thought, and their spacecraft and their bodies themselves are kind of like in a thought dimension, and whatever they, wherever they want to go, from A to B, and they just think that they're there and B, and they are. Millions of light years can be traversed in a simple and quick way, if you know what I mean. It's the same with heaven. When you get to heaven, the spirit world over there, that world on fire. Excuse me, I'm going to take a drink. Very simply, I'll explain it again, my friends, for those that hadn't heard me before on previous radio shows. If this is new news to you, well, surprise, you have a spirit in your body, and that spirit is made of light energy. Light energy, my friends, made of billions of electrons. Light energy. And where is the source of light energy for our solar system? And we are indigenous to our solar system. Not all solar systems harbor being the same kinds of beings that we are. There's many different varieties of sentient beings out there. But we all originate from the spirit world. Even these extraterrestrial beings have eternal souls, and they have a lifespan, maybe 20,000 years, for example. And once they reach 20,000 years, then just like us, they go to the spirit world, and they're going through their own process of evolution like we are. So when we get to heaven, that world, you know, our spirits will pop out of our bodies, usually through the top of the head or the chest. And depending on the circumstances, you could be looking down on your body right away. Imagine that with the eyes of the spirit and the ears and nose of the spirit. You're a being of light. That's what we are. We're beings of light. You'll notice that you shine with a very type of intensity, depending on the evolution of your soul and how well you've developed yourself spiritually. When you get to the spirit world and you see all the other spirits, people that lived here on Earth throughout the centuries from different cultures that made it to heaven, there are some people that won't right away. There are rehabilitation centers, if you will. There's a place called God's Jail, otherwise known as Hell, for those really bad people like that guy, for example, that drove his truck down the street in New Orleans on Christmas, excuse me, New Year's Eve. People like that, the Hitlers, Mussolinis, and Saddam Husseins, the bad, really bad people that are responsible for the deaths of many people, you know, they don't go back to heaven right away. They are rehabilitated because our mother and father and our creator of the universe, who are separate entities, if you will, are very forgiving and loving, more so than we are. And we wouldn't condemn, would we condemn one of our children? I'm a father. For those parents out there, would you condemn your children to an eternity of suffering and pain just because they disobeyed you or made a mistake? There's usually extenuating circumstances why people act the way they do. It could be because maybe they were sexually abused when they were children, God forbid, or maybe verbally or physically abused. People who are very worldly oriented, so to speak, you know, that didn't put a lot of faith in the spiritual things, and didn't believe in God or the creation of the universe, didn't think about it too often. Very material oriented, you know, money oriented, not thinking about love, this competitive, that kind of a person. Might not make it to heaven right away, but like I said, our spirit parents and the creative universe are very forgiving in their natures, and they will eventually, even someone like Hitler, will be forgiven eventually. He might have already been released from that prison or the dungeon of hell, if you will, which is a terrible place to be, my friend. Not at all a good place, just the worst. Imagine the worst nightmare scenario here on Earth that you could think of, in a war zone, maybe in a frozen Iceland, freezing to death. The pain and suffering that you can experience here on Earth is nothing compared to what it would be like there down below the surface of the Earth, in the center, and all those fiery lava beds where you've heard about people that are wailing and yelling and screaming and the gnashing of teeth that is described in the Bible. People who, as I mentioned, all those reasons why they might go there, who have to spend that time being rehabilitated, because some people need some serious rehabilitation. You know, these active shooters, people who kill people, you know, that enjoy killing people, lots of people. They have to be rehabilitated. They can't go straight to heaven and pass go and collect $200. No, it doesn't work that way. You pay the penalty. If you make a mistake, you have to pay the price. That's the nature of the law of the universe, the nature of the universe. Planets that wind up destroying each other's civilizations. And it's happened around the universe. God forbid it happens here on planet Earth, you know. We need to pray. Prayer is the answer, my friends. But other civilizations that are on other planets that have destroyed themselves in one way or another without saying specifically what it was, they have to pay the price. And it could be several centuries before their planets are restored to the way they were, with plant and animal life being wiped out and most of their civilization and having to rely on eating food from the oceans and seas, rivers and lakes. It might be, if they destroyed themselves through a nuclear holocaust, that radiation that destroyed all the plant and animal life might not have destroyed the life in the waters, but that would also be tainted with radioactivity, and that would cause birth defects. And that would go on for several centuries until things were restored to the way they were beforehand, and they've learned the lesson, learned to love each other and realize what they did wrong. And so then that it changes. They learned the lessons, and they changed their minds, and they learned how to get along with each other and respect and love each other. Just because someone's skin color or their ethnicity is different than someone else's, it doesn't really give a valid reason to take someone's life, you know. The wars that have been going on through the past, and they're still going on now, it's usually because of discrimination in one form or another, and that's not a good reason. It's not a valid reason. Or maybe money, you know, not having money. The fighting that's going on is usually because of those that have and those that don't have. Some people are willing to kill just to get money. These people that hire them to kill other people, to fight their wars, the mercenaries. They're really just trying to survive. Most of them, the majority of them, in my opinion, are taking money to do this so that they have food on the table for their families. It's a sad situation, and it's a shame that we have to resort to that, but it's understandable, right? You can understand that. Imagine yourself. If you didn't have enough food to eat, what would you be willing to, would you live on the street, homeless, begging, asking for money, or would you do something more drastic? And jails are full all across the world from people that were caught trying to do just that. The American West knew of the outlaws that used to rob trains and stagecoaches and used to shoot people and, you know, responsible for killing many people, like Billy the Kid, who really, if you know the story of Billy the Kid, and he did kill a lot of people, but in the beginning, he didn't want to have to do that. It was some relative, his father, was about to be killed, and he defended him and killed that person that was about to kill his relative. I think it was his father. And so the person he killed had relatives, and they came after him, and he killed them. It just so happened that one of those people was a lawman, and so the next thing you know, he was running from the law, and then more lawmen tried to kill him, and he killed them before he was killed, and so it was a vicious circle, you know, and there wasn't a lot of understanding of how it all began. He was just trying to survive, and he wasn't going to give up without a fight, you know, and so that's how things happen sometimes. These people, they don't want to be in that situation, but they get put into the situation because they are defending somebody or they have to survive themselves. And sometimes the courts that they had, I'm going to take a drink. The courts that they have, this court system they have back there were not necessarily fair or just. So sometimes people had to take justice into their own hands. You know what I'm saying? That's just the way it was. But were they bad people to begin with? Sometimes it's just the situation that happens, you know, it turns out that way. Not that they're bad people. Billy the Kid probably could have grown up to be a normal citizen if that hadn't been thrown into that situation there at the beginning, if you know what I mean. And so when we get to heaven, changing the subject, we get to heaven, oh, my friends, the afterlife is very real. You know, we're living in this material world. It's like a school in the university of the universe, a very special learning environment. We learn basic social values and mainly to love each other. You know, all these wars that have been going on. Hello, is it any wonder what the main requirement is to graduate from this existence? It's to learn to love and not to hate. You know, if you hate somebody and you kill them, then not only do you maybe spend a little rehabilitation time in God's jail, but also you'll have to return to a planet of this category of evolution. God forbid that from around the universe there are others in this kind of stage of evolution, or even worse, you know, maybe back a few thousand years when, you know, they didn't have a lot of technology, a lot of money, and they're killing each other all the time, getting in wars. How would you like to be born on a planet like that, say maybe 1,000 years ago, you know, in our own civilization here on Earth, this planet? You know, they've had a lot of wars in the past. I don't want to personally go back to a planet, even planet Earth. I don't want to come back here. No way. No, thank you. I want to graduate from this existence, evolve my soul so that I can graduate to a higher level of evolution, so that I'm surrounded by people that love each other, that adore each other, that understand each other, that know everything about each other. And yes, they adore each other. They think they're the best things since sliced bread, so to speak, my friends. If you understood just how complicated and complex the human being is, with hearts that beat independently of our wills and lungs that purify the blood through thousands of miles of veins in our bodies, and our brains that are more complicated than the most sophisticated computer that we have at our disposal right now. Even as great as our technology is, it's a vulgar comparison to the human brain, comparing the best computers we have. We are fearfully and wonderfully made, my friends. And we should look at each other like just an amazing creations, you know. Everyone deserves dignity and respect. And we deserve to look after each other. That's what it's all about. And today I was telling Dawn that I made a commitment. It's been a very difficult decision for me. I'm going to take a drink. I moved into this house I'm living in right now in 2010. And I paid $142,000 for it. 3 bedrooms, 2.5 bathrooms. I moved in here by myself, my present wife. We weren't married at the time. And she was living in Alexandria, Virginia. I had just moved from there. We were living in the same apartment complex. And I came here because my job required it. And after a few months, I was wondering if Jackie, my wife, was going to join me here, because she was working the job that she had in Alexandria, Virginia, Fort Belvoir, to be specific. And that was back when they were bracking certain installations. BRAC is when it stands for Base Realignment Commission, where they close down some installations and they move other installations to different locations. So my command was changed from Crystal City, Virginia, to Fort Sam Houston, Texas. And her organization, the Army Material Command, was moved from Fort Belvoir to Huntsville, Alabama. She didn't want to go there, to Huntsville, so they were going to find her a job in the National Capital Region, and she was going to be placed on a program called PPP, Priority Placement Program. And so we had kind of a platonic relationship going on at the time. We were friends. We used to go for walks, go to restaurants, movies. And so when I asked her if she was going to move here, she said, well, I mean, I really didn't think about continuing our relationship, you know, the way it was. They're offering me a job here in the National Capital Region, which is Fort Meade, the Military District of Washington, and Fort Belvoir. And I said, well, I had to think quickly, and I said, well, would you like to get married? She said, yes. So she moved here in May of 11, and we lived together for 6 months. And then her stepdaughter and three grandchildren had been living with her in the apartment complex that we were living in Crystal City, Virginia. They moved in with us because they didn't have any place to go. And they're kind of like a dysfunctional family, if you will. The mother she's worked a job before, but there's some things going on there in her physical being, if you will. They say that she might have postpartum syndrome, you know. She has four children. So she's been dealing with some mental issues, if you will. But she's a good woman. She's very intelligent, too. But she's subject to depression, so to speak, if you know what I mean. They, at first, they were kind of testy, you know. I would tell them to take their shoes off in the house, and they would disobey me. And then we got into some verbal conflicts. And after about a year, I had them evicted. And they went through that whole process. And finally, the sheriffs had to show up and tell them to take their stuff out of the house. They got in a cab and went down to the bus station and took a bus to my wife's sister's house in Dover, Delaware. I lived there for a year, but not surprisingly, they didn't get along, and they were kicked out of there. And then they moved in with my wife's niece, and there were six of them living in a one-bedroom apartment. And so my wife said, it's not working. Can we have them come back to San Antonio? And the plan was to put them in a place called the Haven for Hope in downtown San Antonio, where they were going to shack them up there and give them some on-the-job training and help them out. And I had arranged that, but when they showed up at the house, it felt like old times, and my wife seemed so happy, and I didn't feel too badly myself. I said, well, you know what? You all can stay. And so the rest is history. That was back around 2013, 2014, and they've been living here. But now things have kind of heated up. I told Doug about it, and I didn't know what to do. I've been going back and forth. Are we going to live on our own? Are we going to help them to be self-sufficient, you know, because they don't provide any money. They live here rent-free, you know. Some of the children don't do any chores. And I know I've heard of what a lot of the people I work with say, but my wife, she's still working on, she's got a better relationship than she ever did with her daughter, Eva. So you ever heard the expression, happy wife, happy life? And I just couldn't do it. You know, I couldn't. I mean, we could have moved to a 55-plus community where all the utilities are included, and they could have stayed here in the house. I would have paid the mortgage. Try to teach them to be self-sufficient, but God has blessed me, and now I don't mind continuing to bless them because they're people. You know, they have souls, and so I finally made a decision. I talked with my wife last night, and her rationale was pretty sound. And the bottom line was it would cost more money to do that, to be separated, where I would be looking after this house, paying for the mortgage, HOA dues, trash, the American Home Shield, and then also food for the dogs. And the dogs were a major consideration, too, because we love the dogs, and they would have stayed here with them, and we would have been separated from them, and one of the dogs sleeps with us in our bed, and she's just a beautiful dog. She's getting older. Two of the dogs are old. One's about a year old, and he's a big rambunctious puppy. Huge dog now, and he runs around the backyard, and he bothers the older dogs. And he's cool, but he bites. We need to get him some training, make a long story short. I then decided to buy this house today. I'm going to take a drink. And it is a nice house, 5 bedrooms, so everyone's going to get their own bedroom. You used to see the living conditions here in this house. Two of my granddaughters, they live in this room. It's piled up to the top, almost to the ceiling with clothes, and they live in like a very small space. I've got my 15-year-old granddaughter and my 23 or 24-year-old granddaughter. They live in a squalor, just terrible conditions, you know, because my stepdaughter, Eva, she's a hoarder, you know. She never had a lot of money, so she doesn't want to throw anything away. And my 15-year-old granddaughter, Malia, she's involved with sports in school, and she's doing very well. She's the fastest female on the track and field team. She does soccer. She's a superstar. And so we're going to help them. And I feel that God has blessed me. The Creator has blessed me. And now I'm blessing other people. And we're giving them a life. We're improving their quality of life. Now, some people might disagree with me. A lot of people at work, they know my situation. They said, Blake, you need to kick them out again. And I just can't do it, you know, because I don't want to see them on the street. I don't want them to be homeless. We're trying to teach them to be self-sufficient. The grandson, now he's got a job with Amazon. He works overnight, drives a forklift. So he probably makes close to minimum wage, but he's got a job. India, the other granddaughter, she graduated from high school. She was going to college for a while, and then she dropped out of college. So Malia's about midway through the 10th grade, and we bought this house, 5 bedrooms, 3 bathrooms. It's in a green belt. It's a nice view. There's some lakes over there in the distance. They're building houses in that area. $354,000. My mortgage is going to be about $2,200. I'm 100% disabled veteran, so I get exempt from property taxes. I'm going to take a drink. And we'll be moving in around the end of February. And I think it'll be affordable. My wife's going to help me. My wife's going to help me to pay for some of the expenses, like the energy and the water, although they should be less because this is a modern home and it's energy efficient. And so we need to get new furniture. Fortunately, I have my 401k, so to speak, and I'm going to cash that in, and that should pay for the furniture and any other miscellaneous expenses. I got to get a new water softener, and it should cover it, I think. So God has blessed me, and I should hopefully, God willing, get some more money from the VA for back pay. And there's a claim, a couple of claims that are outstanding. So pray for me that the VA will continue to grant my claims, because I donated one of my kidneys to my son back in 1995. And back then, the surgery was a lot less, a lot more invasive than they are now. So I would, back then, it caused me some, because of the nature of the surgery, I've got a 9-inch scar from one side of my right abdomen to the other, you know, from front to back, in other words. And hold on just a minute. I think one of the dogs is trying to come out. I hope he doesn't come out. I'm going to have to get him inside. He'll start barking. Anyway, so a 9-inch scar. And so a lot of my disabilities are associated with that scar. I get 10% disability for the scar. I get 70% disability for my PTSD and anxiety associated with the kidney donation, with the scar, I think, because it's hard to move, because that area was, the nerves were cut, and it took a long time for the nerves to grow back. It was like a board, having a board in my side, walking around, any kind of moving, you know, bending over, twisting from left to right, has been difficult over the years. And running, it affects my running too. And so, what else? There's a GERD, you know, which is the gastrointestinal disorder. And I get some 10% for that. Because, not surprisingly, one of the dogs is trying to get out here. And I think that maybe they can wait. When you have, like, a person has their right abdominal area pinched with a scar, the internal workings underneath the skin might be, say, compromised a little bit, especially with moving around. But I'm doing okay. You know, it's not too bad. But now surgeries are less invasive, so one can donate a kidney nowadays and help someone else. I highly encourage anyone to donate one of their kidneys. My son got a second kidney back in 2014 from his best friend's mom. And so it's been 10 years, and he's doing okay. And it's a gift of life. It really is. If it had been back around 1995 when I donated my kidney, I would say, you know, think about it hard before you do it, because you get that scar and that could cause disabilities, including anxiety and PTSD. But now with the surgery less invasive, it's truly a gift of life, and I think, bodily speaking, you won't be affected too much or have disabilities resulting from that. Naturally, I think you would gravitate to a healthier lifestyle if you did donate one of your kidneys to someone and give them that gift of life. You would probably drink more water, and everyone should drink more water, my friends. Let me give that piece of advice to anyone. If you drink more water, if you drink the daily recommended amount of water each day, then you're going to do yourself a favor, and you could even prevent diseases from happening, cancer or heart disease or diabetes. If you drink your daily recommended amount of water, H2O, high-quality H2O, I guarantee you your body is going to thank you for it. And people that lose a kidney or lose their kidney functions, is mainly, in my opinion, and I've done a lot of research, because they don't drink enough water. Yeah, so good advice. I know you're a co-creator, God in the making, and you like to do things your way, and you like to learn things your way, but please take that piece of advice for me, you know? Anything else, all the advice I give on my radio show, please drink your water. It's good for you. I do. I had a Heineken Zero. I've been having these Heineken Zero beers. I enjoy the taste of non-alcoholic beer, but then I found out that it's got a little bit of alcohol in it. And I thought to myself, oh, no. So Heineken Zero is supposed to have 0.0% alcohol. Some people on the internet say, yeah, it is 0% alcohol-free. And the Bureau of Tobacco and Firearms says it's 0% alcohol. Now, some people say it's got 0.03% or less alcohol. So I don't know who to believe, but I don't want to drink any more alcohol, that's for sure, because I gave up drinking alcohol back in 1988, because I used to drink back then, and I determined it was time to give it up. I was getting in a little bit of trouble at work. Without going into the details, it's a long story, but suffice it to say, I gave it up, and I've been grateful that I did ever since, because now I just had a new life, you know. It gave me a new life. And gave up smoking, too, back then. Not a good thing. And you've heard the recent information about alcohol, especially if you drink in excess. In moderation, my wife drinks in moderation. She'll have a glass of wine with a meal, or maybe a beer. And that's it. She doesn't drink in excess. She might have a hard liquor drink, maybe a margarita or whiskey or rum with some kind of mixer on special occasions like New Year's Eve or a birthday or Christmas time. But pretty much she drinks in moderation, which is a good thing. But they say that excessive use of alcohol, excessively drinking alcohol, can lead to diseases, right? You've heard that, right, recently? I'm sure most people have heard of it. And hold on just a minute. I'm going to close the door. one of our dogs came out to do her thing. Goldie, the American Pit Bull Terrier, female. She's, I think, about 12, 14 years old. She's in all the dogs are rescues. So are our cats. And I was thinking that Lenny, the young puppy, when he comes out here in the backyard, he thinks that everything's talking to him. He hears the cars over there in the distance and like birds or some kind of life behind the backyard here. Could be coyotes or deer or wild hogs or birds that twitter in the trees. They all get his attention. So if he's barking at them, squirrels, or there was a possum that ran across the fence last week in the morning, and he was barking at that. He just loves to bark, you know, bark, bark, bark. But he didn't come out this time, so that's good, because I don't like being distracted on my radio show. And I'm so grateful for the opportunity to talk with you on my radio show. Thank you to BBS Radio for giving me a chance to be passionate about a subject like what I talk about and express my feelings and have 55 minutes to talk. It's great public speaking practice, and that's what I do. I'm a Toastmaster. I practice public speaking. I'm a member of three clubs, and presently, I'm going to take a drink. I'm a division director, which means I have 19 clubs I'm responsible for, four areas. But after the end of the year, 30 June, that's it for me, my friends. No more. We're going to quit Toastmasters. Just keep on going to the church and the choir and singing with the choir and practicing Wednesday night and singing with the choir Sundays. I have a solo tomorrow in church. It goes, you want to hear it? It goes like this. It's called Free Worshipper. Free to dance and sing. Free to lift my hands and worship. Lord, I'm free. Lord, I'm free. Free to dance and sing. Free to lift my hands and worship. Lord, I'm free. Lord, I'm free. And then I would say to everybody, free to dance and sing, and the choir repeats it. Free to dance and sing. Lord, I'm free. And they repeat what I say. And we do that a couple of times. And then I say, then I'm a free worshiper. And they take the lead for that. I'm a free worshiper. I'm a free worshiper. I'm a free worshiper. Lord, I'm free. And then I have them repeat it. I'm a free worshiper. I'm a free worshiper. I'm a free worshiper, Lord, I'm free. And then back to free to dance and sing, free to lift my hands and worship, Lord, I'm free. Lord, I'm free. And one more time. Free to dance and sing, free to lift my hands and worship, Lord, I'm free. Lord, I'm free. And then I say, I thank God I'm free. I sing, I thank God I'm free, and I'll never be bound again. I thank God I'm free, and I'll never be bound again. I'll say, choir, sing it. I thank God, no sing. I thank God I'm free. And then back to, I'm a free worshiper. I'm a free worshiper. Lord, I'm free. I'm a free worshiper. I'm a free worshiper. I'm a free worshiper. Lord, I'm free. Lord, I'm free. And they'll go on. Lord, I'm free. Lord, I'm free. I'm going to take a drink. And then the last part. After they did, Lord, I'm free. Lord, I'm free. Then I go, oh, oh, and they go, oh, 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 Lord, I'm free. Oh, 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 Lord, I'm free. And do that maybe three times. I'll be looking at the director, you know, getting on the same sheet of music, coordinating with her so that we don't make any mistakes. Oh, God, please, Let us not make any mistakes yesterday, but if we do make a mistake, if I make a mistake or the choir makes a mistake, God, just help us to keep on going and do our best, please. And then the end, the final part is, if the sun sets you free, and it's free indeed, when the sun sets you free, you're free indeed. If the sun sets you free, you're free indeed. If the sun sets you free, you're free indeed. If the sun sets you free, you're free indeed. If the sun sets you free, you're free indeed. If the sun sets you free, you're free indeed. The sun sets you free, you're free indeed. And then I'll go, Lord, I'm free. How about you, everybody? Are you free? And that's my song, solo tomorrow. And I get the occasional solos, but that's something we're going to keep up. Toastmasters, we're not going to keep up. Got to drink again. Keep the vocal cords lubricated. Living here on this world, my friends, this is I mentioned before, this is a planet of a lower evolutionary category. Throughout the universe, there are other planets that are of a higher evolutionary category. On its scale of 1 to 9, planet Earth is a category 1. There are planets that are a category 9, and what are they? They're veritable paradises, my friends. For one thing, the animals don't eat each other, and that weighs heavily on us, living in an environment where animals eat each other. Is it any surprise there's wars, my friends? Also, the atmosphere weighs heavy on us. You know, the barometer rising and falling, the weather, the changes in the weather, the possible cataclysms that were subjected to wildfires. That's not a pleasant thing to have to go through, having your house burned to the ground, you know, trying to survive, breathing that smoke in. 11 people were killed so far, I think the number is. Or maybe getting struck by lightning or tornadoes or hurricanes. This is Mother Nature can be a violent thing, so to speak, you know. And so it's really, in my mind, no surprise that there's wars and people killing each other. Yeah, it can weigh heavy on some people's mind holes, you know. Of course, that's no justification for killing other people, you know, having these wars, but it's partially understandable, if you know what I mean. But we volunteered to come here. This is one of the most difficult schools of learning in the universe, my friend. I'm telling you the truth. So feel good about that. You are a brave soul for having come here. It is not easy. And so I hope you're doing well. Remember to develop yourself spiritually, because really that's the reason why we're here. And how do you do that? Well, you listen to Blake's show, The Universe of the Soul's Evolution, and all of some of those other really good shows on BBS Radio. And check out YouTube for near-death experiences and extraterrestrial encounters and Astro Legends TV, which has some really good videos on the extraterrestrial life that's out there. And my friends know that, just like an avatar, those blue bodies that they could slip themselves into, there are civilizations out there that know how to create any body, any other body of all these sentient beings on other planets. They know how to create those bodies. Isn't that amazing? It's a very delicate process where you have to have complete knowledge of how all the different bodies are inside a body, the astral body, the physiological body, the fluidic body, the astrotypical body, different bodies. Just like an avatar, those blue bodies, they slip their astral body inside and drove them around. Now just use your imagination and think maybe there might be some people on Earth that are driving, so to speak, in quotation marks, driving a human body around, who have all, that have, I've got 1 minute, my friends, that have altered their genetic being to resemble a human being. Well, go take a look in the evening sky, my friends. There's a lot of stars, suns out there. The creative universe is alive and well. Creator of the universe, thank you for everything. Please bless us, everybody. Keep us safe and well. Protect us. in a school of hard learning here on Earth. Goodbye, everybody. Talk to you next week. I love you. Bye-bye.